Hello and welcome to another edition of the Tree City Sports Podcast. I am your host, as usual, Andrew Baker, here with my co-host, as usual, Graham Moen.
That's pretty much how I felt watching the last 9 minutes of the game last week against the Rams. We were watching it together, and it was just the Browns really had a chance to win that game against the Rams last week, and they basically missed that opportunity to, at worst case, tie the game and go into overtime with a chance to win. Because it's just something is going on with the offense, and we have to talk about it just because it's not just a one or two game thing anymore. It's becoming a real issue, and it's happening in every game.
Well, that's kind of the problem with this game. Was going in, you and I both said with the Browns being out almost their entire secondary and still their right tackle, still their starting tight end, still their third receiver, who is an important third receiver. You know, you and I both kind of said, like, hey, look, you know, the Browns are probably going to lose this game. We hope they can just kind of keep it close and kind of look decent doing it.
Which they did.
And the Browns kept the game close, and yet it feels very empty because, quite frankly, the Rams didn't have their best game.
Right.
And the game was really there for the taking for the Browns. And there were a lot of moments that they, you know, pretty much just fumbled it away. Not literally. There weren't any fumbles, thankfully. But,
yeah,
you know, it's just – the way they lost was a lot more disappointing than the result itself, mm-hmm. I think, in my mind. Losing to the Rams is nothing to really be, like, upset about.
Right.
But the fact that, like you mentioned, it's the offense, and it's not just the offense. It's the fact that the skill is there, but it's just not organized. And, you know, they fix some things, like they're actually getting to the line in time now, which, wow, what a miracle.
Yeah, they're actually calling plays when there's not 3 seconds left on the play clock.
But the play calling itself has been an issue, and
just inconsistent.
And Baker Mayfield has really struggled with a lot of things. And if you would have told me the Browns would have lost this game by one score, I wouldn't have been upset about it. But watching the game, it felt like they probably should have won. Because they had every opportunity to do so. You know what I mean?
The Browns won the turnover battle. They had 3 turnovers to 1 turnover, and that was at the very end of the game by Baker trying to make a desperate play. But it was an entire microcosm of everything that was happening with him. He was running straight into the pass rush again, which he had done throughout the entire game, where the line, especially the tackles, were blocking fine for him. But then once he went outside, obviously they have to disengage or else they'll get a holding call. And he just runs right into pass rushes, and he never runs left. He always runs right. So it's just super predictable, and everyone just tracks him and watches him. And then, and Andrew mentioned this before the thing, it cuts the field in half, so it prevents any other plays from happening on the backside, because you are told in the NFL you're not supposed to throw the ball to the other direction if you're running a rollout. So it's just a huge problem for the Browns and Baker. He's not reading the field well. Wade Phillips confused him, which – again, Wade Phillips is an elite defensive coordinator, and we talked about that last week, but he just was not reading the field well. He was not getting these passes down, and they had Sunday Night Football had a good stat that they were actually using where, I don't know how much this reads into it specifically, but when it was under 2.5 seconds for Baker to throw the ball, he was lights out. He was Baker that we had seen last year. But when it was over 2.5 seconds and he was extending plays, he was dreadful. Just absolutely dreadful.
Yeah, which doesn't really shock me, because if you're throwing the ball in under 2.5 seconds, that should mean that someone's open and the play worked. So, of course, you know, if you're throwing the ball that quick, you know, you should have a good rating. But like you said, last year he was extending plays. He was staying in the pocket, stepping up in the pocket, escaping when necessary.
Mm-hmm.
This year, maybe it was the second half of the Titans game when he got abused. But for whatever reason, this year he's, like you said, wildly running out of the pocket, always right. And so the right tackle just has to disengage, and then he's got another second to throw the ball, and the whole defense knows what's happening.
Right.
So I don't know what that is. I don't know why Baker's doing that. I don't know if it's just, like I said, he got abused in week one, and maybe he's just nervous since the line hasn't been great and has some injuries. But I'll say this. You know, not only is he, you know, running into a pass rush, he's also missing open receivers early in the play.
Yeah.
For example, we'll talk about this sequence later in the game, or later in the podcast, rather. We'll talk about the goal line near the end of the game, and he missed a wide-open Landry on what would have been the game-tying touchdown.
Right.
And, you know, he's just not reading the field well at all. And like you said, Wade Phillips did some kind of zone seams that confused him a lot, and it seems like so far this year, teams have figured out that if they play man-to-man, he's going to pick them apart because he can open windows by his accuracy. But if they do things, you know, kind of confusing or zone or non-traditional, he really has struggled to the field so far.
Yeah.
But, you know, the offensive line coming into this game was probably the biggest concern we had, aside from the just lack of organization on offense. But I think the offensive line actually played fairly well in this game. Nick Chubb got going to some degree. He didn't have one of those monster games like he had at some points last year. But I think the offensive line did a fairly solid job, and it just seemed like Baker was just gun-shy back there. And just he just isn't stepping up in the pocket at all right now. He's always sprinting right. And I'm not really sure why that is, but it's something that hopefully he can get corrected this week because it's going to be a big game.
Yeah, I mean, we see Baker in, like, fleeting moments of, like, what he was doing last year. Like, there was the one drive in the first half of the game where the Browns went right down the field on the Rams, and they were scoring touchdowns, and they scored the touchdown, and he was looking exactly like he did last year, where he was confident back there in the pocket, sitting back there, making plays, picking them apart, and they went right down the field and scored a touchdown. So that's the big – I think that's the most frustrating part, is we see those moments with them, and even in this game, there were still moments of – wow, Baker's doing what he's supposed to be doing. And there's a lot of high expectations on him, and he put some of those on himself by the way he talks and the way he goes about himself, and he's never going to change that way. And I don't think Cleveland fans would want him to, but he is definitely not the same player that he was last year, and he has regressed a little bit so far to begin this season. And it's really just frustrating to watch. I can't come up with a better word for it. It's so annoying to see him do these things that we saw him, that he really excelled at last year, but he's just doing them all the time now, making it way too predictable for the offense to function.
Yeah, there's not really a lot else to say about it, because you could say, I mean, we could break down the types of mistakes he's made, but for the most part, we've already done that. And I don't really know what he has to do to correct them besides accepting, like, look, man, you can't run your right tackle out of a block
every time,
every play. And you have to trust your offensive line to some degree. I understand the offensive line's not great, and it's not. But I think the Browns' offensive line has been, I don't know, pretty average this year.
They played sound against the Rams, except for a couple plays where Aaron Donald just blew up the play. But that's going to happen
to literally any offensive line. Yes,
yes, even Joel Bitonio, Pro Bowl left guard, got literally destroyed by Aaron Donald on a play. It's going to happen.
Exactly. So I think Baker has to just slow down and understand, like, maybe his offensive line is not going to be amazing, but he still has to trust them, because if he just completely goes out of the script of the play, out of the pocket, then he's not giving his offensive line a chance. I think if he gives him a chance, you know, the offense could look a lot better for sure. Another concern is Freddie Kitchens. And I think it's really interesting, because coming into the year, the reasons we were so optimistic about the Browns, besides, you know, the general talent around the roster, was the fact that we had a quarterback and we had a coach that the quarterback liked and, you know, kind of knew his system and all that. And Freddie Kitchens has shown so far absolutely nothing to show that he can be a head coach. And I'll just run down a few decisions here, and then we can have a discussion about it afterwards.
Sure.
Graham and I highlighted six decisions. I'll go through them real quick here. So at one point in the game, the Browns had third and long near their own goal line, again, with partially a backup offensive line, and they ran four verticals.
Yeah.
Which
did not work.
No. I mean, there wasn't – I don't really understand how it was going to work. It was just a really weird play call, which basically meant the offensive line had to hold up for, you know, 4 or 5 seconds, these long developing routes. But, and again, near your own goal line, that's a really unnecessary risk to take.
Which is exactly what they did against the Titans, and it bit them in the butt.
Yes. The second to last drive, Freddie Kitchens was, I wouldn't say terrible throughout the game, mostly near the end of the game when it got important, which not great.
Which happens in every NFL game. Like I've said plenty of times, this games in the NFL are decided by things like this.
So the Browns got, I don't know if it was like a false start, illegal shift, something, some 5 yard menial penalty.
It was second and four, so it was second and nine.
Yeah. So it was second and nine. And there was an obvious pass interference on the play where the Browns receiver just got knocked out of bounds before the ball got there.
Yeah.
And I don't know if it's because Freddie Kitchens didn't see the play, but he has people for that. You know what I mean?
Right.
I mean, he's got people to communicate to him, hey, this is a potential challenge here. I don't know if it's because he just thought, since there was already a penalty, that it would just offset and it wouldn't matter. But it totally would have mattered because,
absolutely would have mattered.
Because that offsetting penalty, if he would have challenged, would have made it second and nine instead of third and nine.
Yes.
And third and nine is not a good situation to be in. And that's one of the other problems with the Browns offense so far is they've been in a lot of third and longs.
Right.
And he didn't challenge that. I don't really know why.
He even talked to the ref and was just kind of like, and when he was talking to him, it was like, oh, looks like he's going to challenge it. Nope.
Well, and it's a problem when the common fan and the announcers can clearly point something out that the coach just missed in the moment that it happens. And that's an issue. Also, this play has been talked about many, many times, but the fourth and nine draw. So the Browns were at the Rams 40 with 9 minutes to go, down four. So from the 40-yard line, that would have been a 57-yard field goal. You can't try that, especially not with your rookie kicker. If you punt, it's not great to punt from that close, but if you go for it on fourth and nine, you don't get it. You're giving the ball almost at midfield.
And their kicker, Greg Zuerlein, is known for being having the best leg in the NFL, and he can make a field goal, and all they have to do is get 25, 30 yards, which is exactly what happened as a result of this.
Correct.
Which made it a one-score game, which then goes into the process and the events that happened later on the game.
Yeah, so I have – not only was the fourth and nine draw terrible – which everyone has discussed and mocked Freddie Kitchens for.
Yeah, it was
It's not entirely clear whether it was a called play or an audible. Most people seem to think it was a called play. You just, even if it does surprise the defense, a draw is not designed to get you 9 yards.
No, it's supposed to get you like five or six.
It's just not. And that's terrible in and of itself. But the decision-making to even go for it is a bigger concern for me because when you're down four with 9 minutes to go, you can punt, pin them, and get the ball back with plenty of time to go win the game with a touchdown.
Against a team that you had stopped for a good majority of the game and it created a lot of problems for the Rams.
Correct. And a team that wasn't running the ball well, right. The Rams. And if it was fourth and two, I would have had no problem going for it there. But fourth and nine is – you don't go for it on fourth and nine unless you're in kind of desperation territory. And down four with 9 minutes to go and all three timeouts left is not desperation territory.
No, you still had time in the game to affect.
While the draw play made no sense and it's shown so far that his play calling hasn't been good, I think in the moment the decision to even go for it is more concerning for me than the play call itself.
Yeah.
Later in the game, the Browns got down to the 4-yard line with under a minute to go.
That was off of a turnover.
All three timeouts, and they didn't run the ball once. Which, again, if you have three timeouts,
just run the ball.
You can run the ball because
you can stop the clock.
Time is not an issue.
Yes.
They did not target Odell Beckham Jr. one time.
Right, which is your best receiver by far and someone that can get open. And he was open. There was a couple plays that happened in that time that showed he was open on certain plays.
Yes. So not only did you not use pretty much your two best offensive players at all from the 4-yard line, this is the thing that really gets me. And it's stuff that just drives me crazy where it doesn't make sense. So you can say maybe he wasn't running the ball because he wanted to take four shots at the end zone. That way he could save all three of his timeouts. So if they didn't score, he could call those three timeouts and get the ball back. That would be your argument for not wanting to run the ball.
And I understand where he's coming from in that aspect.
And this is where it gets bad. On fourth down, sometimes in the NFL, teams will call a play. The offense will go on the field. They'll see what the defense's look is, and they'll call a timeout to assess. That's all well and good. The Browns called timeout on fourth down with 40 seconds left in a game they're down four into the 5-yard line.
Yeah.
So what that means is if you don't get a touchdown on that fourth down play,
it's over.
Those other two timeouts are completely worthless.
Yes.
So they saved all of their timeouts, then didn't run the ball, and then used one of the timeouts. So even once they didn't get the fourth down, the Rams didn't even have to run plays.
Yeah.
And the entire process of the last 10 minutes of the game from a head coaching perspective was really, really poor. And I think that the play calling is something that may improve as Freddie works with his offensive coordinator to kind of combine those two schemes, which is something we've discussed before.
Yeah.
But the decision-making and the thought process behind things has so far for me shown like a real large lack of in-the-moment critical thinking.
Yeah.
And that's a major, major concern that someone maybe overmatches a head coach. And Freddie Kitchens is a head coach because of his relationship with Baker Mayfield and because of his history as a play caller last season. And Baker's been bad, and the play calling's been weird, and the head coaching decisions have been not good. And I think all that's a major, major concern on what kind of upside the team is going to have this year.
Yeah, I mean, the least of those problems is that during the game when we were moving the balls, we were running a lot of RPOs, which is run play options, and they were working really well. And then all of a sudden they just said, you know what, we're not going to run those anymore. We're fine. But Baker is comfortable running those, and he ran those both in college and last year in the offense once Freddie took over. And they just stopped running plays that were effective for them. I don't know if they thought that the Rams defense was going to key in on it. I think Freddie got outthought by both Sean McVay and Wade Phillips. And that's where those experienced coordinators, and the Browns have those, but that's where those people that have been there together for long periods of time and then have the continuity, that is what made the big difference in this game, is because the Rams and McVay know exactly how they were going to play that game. Wade Phillips knew how he wanted to play against Baker, and they basically made the adjustments that Freddie didn't, and that cost us the game.
And that was, you know, besides the offensive line, that was our biggest concern coming into this game, is Sean McVay and Wade Phillips are just a completely different class of coach than Freddie Kitchens. And after the game, Freddie Kitchens said that, you know, you can blame me for all this. And
he keeps saying that, though.
Well, it's good to show ownership, unlike Hugh Jackson ever did. But also, yes, if you keep getting blamed, eventually you're just going to get fired. You know what I mean?
Yeah, I mean, if you just keep putting the blame on yourself, it's just like, okay, we've heard this shtick before. We know it's your fault. We watch the game as Browns fans. We know it's your fault. You don't have to tell us it's your fault. We know. Yeah.
Well, it's good to take ownership, but at a certain point, the ownership doesn't really matter if the results continue to not be there.
And of this happened, and we lost by one score.
Like, Hugh Jackson never took ownership, and eventually he got blamed because he got fired. And obviously we're nowhere near that point with Freddie Kitchens yet, but there's a lot of concerning signs. He says that there's not any consideration being given to him giving up the play calling duties.
Yeah.
But the Browns have one of the more respected play callers in the NFL as their offensive coordinator in Todd Monken. And to me, if Freddie Kitchens is struggling so much as a head coach, maybe it's time to take that play calling away from him so he has less on his plate during the game, because his in-game decision-making has been so poor. Maybe if he didn't have to call the plays, he'd have more time to think these processes through. And again, you've got Todd Monken, who is a highly respected play caller. And at a certain point, if the Browns have another ugly showing on offense this week, something's going to have to give, whether it be Monken calling the plays or Freddie Kitchens, you know, going all Todd Haley on us and firing Todd Monken. You know what I mean? Not that Freddie can make the firing himself, but something with this offensive mix is not working at all. And the Browns have way too much talent for it to continue, is the point.
And on a positive note, before we go in to our break and everything, Steve Wilks had this team, had this defense ready to play, despite the fact that we were missing Morgan Burnett, Demarius Randall, Greedy Williams, and Denzel Ward.
So that's both your starting safeties and both your starting corners. And the Browns lost by one touchdown.
And luckily, the Browns are fortunate that we have deep corners, that we had Terrence Mitchell and TJ Carey, who both played really well. The only person that really struggled, which isn't a surprise, is Justin Burris, because he had just joined the team. And they made him the slot corner, effectively making him in charge of Cooper Kupp, who decided that he was going to have a breakout game, scored two touchdowns for the Rams, and basically was just running all over the field. Anytime they got anything going, it was Cooper Kupp. And even Sheldon Richardson played really well this game. The defensive line was getting pressure as the game went along. Myles Garrett got another sack. No roughing the passer penalties this week. So he got up to six sacks on the air. Richardson was playing well. Okunjobi and Vernon were doing well. The Browns also stopped the run really well. And they've continued. And while they've given up 102 yards a game for rushing, I feel like that is a bad stat for in terms of the numbers, because the Browns' run defense has actually been quite good this year. And I think the pass defense has looked even better as well. They're barely giving up. The Browns' defense in terms of total yards is only giving up a little over 300 a game. Granted, one of those games was against the Jets, but still, you were playing the Titans, who have a very well-known offense, and then at the same time, you were playing the Rams, who have, if not the best offense, one of the best offenses in the NFL. So you have to go in there and you played your butt off. You had three turnovers, including a gorgeous interception play by TJ Carey, diving to the ground to get it, and they still lost.
Yeah, I mean, look, man, like at this point, the Browns are waiting on the offense because
the defense has played well all three games.
The Rams' interior line is a pretty big concern for them. They have a lot of new faces there and inexperienced faces there. Sheldon Richardson had what I would think is his first good game as a Brown. He played pretty well. The Rams were not able to run the ball with Todd Gurley at all.
Yeah.
The Browns really shut him down. And the Browns, like you said, struggle with Cooper Kupp to be sure. But for a team that was missing, a lot of teams with all their starters would gladly give up 20 points to the Rams.
Absolutely. The Browns, defense was great.
And for the Browns to be missing four starters in the secondary and not to mention Christian Kirksey, starting linebacker.
Absolutely.
It's just, I was really impressed with how the defense played, and it gave me a kind of a vote of confidence in Steve Wilks, because for a coordinator to get a defense with this much change week over week in terms of injuries to play that well against this mm-hmm. caliber of offense was really impressive. And perhaps the Rams didn't play their best game. As a road team, they often are not nearly as good as they are at home. But the weather was good. It's not like this was a snow game.
It was also a Sunday night game, so it's not like they were playing like a 1 o'clock game on a Sunday, which for West Coast teams is very difficult because they're playing at 5 o'clock their time.
Yeah.
So they really don't have an excuse for jet lag. They showed up in Cleveland far ahead of time on like Thursday or Friday. So they were perfectly in there fine. They were able to get adjusted. And again, it was a night game. It wasn't a day game. And the Browns still played really well against Jared Goff and that Rams offense and had a chance to win the game, but the offense pretty much screwed us.
Yeah, and coming into the year, the number one thing we thought for sure about this team was we were going to have a high-powered offense. The special teams played well again.
Yeah.
Seibert made all of his kicks. Gillen had one shank, but overall punted well. Kadero Hodge, who this Rams team cut in the preseason, is playing really well on special teams as a gunner. Mike Prefer has fixed the special teams after week one.
Yeah, that special teams has looked amazing.
They are allowing 1.5 yards per punt return right now.
Yeah, and the way that Seibert is
and are leading the NFL in kickoff average starting position.
Yeah, they're really doing well and staying disciplined in their lanes and making tackles. And that's another thing we didn't even put in our notes about the Browns before we go to break. The tackling in this game was
really good.
Fantastic. There was very few missed tackles. Usually when the first guy was grabbing you, you went down. And that was something that was really lacking for the Browns the last couple of years, especially with Greg Williams, because he didn't practice tackling that much. So the Browns used to miss tackles. Like every single time they would try to stop somebody, they'd miss a tackle and it'd go from a 4-yard gain into a 10-yard gain. It was just so frustrating to watch. But through this part of the season, Steve Wilks' teams, even including that Titans game, because I don't blame that Titans game on the defense. Baker Mayfield gave them 3 short fields in a row and they scored a bunch of touchdowns. That's not really their fault. They did give up, so that's a little bit of a thing. But at the same time, I understand where they're coming from. That defense has looked good, and it looked really good against this Rams team that, like I said, by a lot of people's estimates, is one of the best offenses in the NFL.
Yeah, I think the defense is solidly above average at this point, and the special teams look solid as well. And it just, you know, Freddie and Baker have been attached to the hip ever since Freddie took over as offensive coordinator last year. And those two guys are the main reasons this Browns team isn't winning right now. And obviously, you know, Freddie's going to be gone well before Baker ever goes if this continues. But, you know, it's 3 games. It's tough to overreact to 3 games, but there are a lot of things, especially with Freddie's decision-making, that are really concerning.
Well, they're becoming trends now. It's not just a game. It's multiple games now that this is happening. And that's why we spent a lot of this first part of the podcast just – this stuff is continuing to happen, and it's not getting adjusted and fixing, even though they said so.
He gave Nick Chubb his touches. That's good.
Finally.
The penalties have been starting to get cut out, which is good.
Yeah.
Special teams is looking better, which is good.
Defense is looking fine.
Baker and Freddie get the offense rolling, there's just –
this team's not going to go anywhere.
Yeah, and the schedule coming up, again, we've talked about it before, does not get easier. We'll talk about that and this week's Ravens game after this break. And we are back. So – the Browns play at Baltimore this week. Baltimore has been one of the best teams in the NFL so far. They lost to the Chiefs this week, which when you're facing Pat Mahomes, you can't really be blamed for losing. Lamar Jackson has been one of the breakout players of the NFL so far. He struggled passing a lot more against Kansas City.
Well, the Kansas City pass rush was getting to him a lot as the game went along, and he had never played from behind before, which was a big thing for him.
I think the Ravens are a good team, and I think they're far and away the division favorites right now. But I also don't want to overreact too much to them annihilating the Dolphins, who are...
and then beating the Cardinals barely.
Yeah, who are far and away the worst team in the NFL. So I think the Browns have a pretty damn legitimate chance to win this game.
They won in Baltimore last year.
Even with it being a road game. So what, in your mind, are the keys to this game, Grim?
I mean, the Browns...
it's a big game.
I mean, the Browns' offense just has to play better, as simple as that. I mean, last year in that week 17 game against the Browns, we saw how much Baker struggled in that last drive when the Browns were trying to go down the field and win the game with a field goal. They're blitzing him, just running jailbreak blitzes the entire time, rushing probably seven, eight people into it and just forcing Baker to make the throws. And he wasn't able to. And the Ravens did lose talent. Like, they lost CJ Mosley. Terrell Suggs is gone. They did bring in Earl Thomas to fortify their secondary, but that team blitzed a lot last year. And their defensive coordinator has always been a guy that manufactures pressure, because they have some decent defensive linemen that are really good at holding the point of attack, but nothing that's like jumps out at you when it comes to rushing the passer. So the Ravens do a lot of different blitzes. They are exotic in the way they do it. They disguise a lot of different coverages. And the Browns are going to have to be able to both learn from the game last year, but also realize that this is a completely different team and defense compared to last year, because they had CJ Mosley last year and they don't have him. So, but at the same time, that Ravens defense has been together for a long period of time. Their defensive coordinator has been on that team for a long time, and they know how to play, and they've played Baker before, and they know how to play him. They played in both games last year. So they are the team so far that we've played that has the most amount of experience against Baker, and they're going to be the team that probably can, that knows a lot of his weaknesses, but also have seen what's happened on film recently, and they're going to send pressure that way. They might try to overload the right side and force him to make a run the other way or do something like that, because if he keeps running to the right, eventually teams are going to be like, all right, we're just going to overload blitz to the right and make you beat us. And maybe he escapes and makes a play or two, but the Browns have to see if they can protect Baker, because they last year against the Ravens, they were having a lot of trouble protecting him in those situations, in those key situations. I mean, Baker has to be able to get the ball out quick in this game. It's simple as that. I understand for some long plays, if you get the offense going and you're in rhythm, the Browns get in rhythm for a drive, maybe two, and then they just fall apart. They have to sustain drives. They have to have some rhythm going in this game, or else the Ravens are just going to key in on anything the Browns are doing.
Yeah, that's the thing, is the Ravens, I feel like it's been, since their existence, the Ravens have had a really good defense.
Yeah, I mean,
like, literally, it's been like 25 years.
Ray Lewis got drafted right around when they started and making that franchise. So they have had a good defense from Ray Lewis and Ed Reed, with Terrell Suggs involved, to all these different players.
They have so much continuity at all times, it seems like. The Ravens, especially with Harbaugh, since he's been there, the Ravens are a really good special teams team. They are, like you said, they're a defense that knows how to confuse quarterbacks. They don't have the high-end defensive talent they've had in previous years, but they're still a really good defense.
I mean, they did bring in Earl Thomas, which you lost Eric Weddle, which was a big loss, right. But Earl Thomas is younger, and other than that broken leg he suffered, has been, if not the best free safety in the league, one of the best free safeties.
Absolutely. And that
Hall of Fame free safety.
And I think, you know, defensively, the Browns are probably still going to be missing Greedy Williams and Denzel Ward.
And maybe Morgan Burnett.
Yeah, which is an issue, because not just you're missing good players, of course, but Lamar Jackson, it seems like, you know, he's really evolving into a passer, whereas last year he was run first. I think the Chiefs game, he struggled a little bit early passing the ball, and I think that was a big key for the Chiefs to win that game.
Yeah.
So I think losing, you know, having both those corners out is a big problem, because I think if the Browns were able to get Lamar Jackson a little bit confused and a little bit inaccurate early, that would be a massive key. Because I think if Lamar Jackson gets rolling early, it could be pretty ugly for the Browns.
Yeah.
But like you said, eventually, like, the defense has been solid. This is going to come down to, can Baker Mayfield read the blitzes, read the zone, read the coverage, and make plays. And
that's on the flip side as well, because the Ravens might be without Jimmy Smith, one of their starting corners, and then potentially Marlon Humphrey, their best starting corner. Even if they're without one of those guys, that creates an advantage for the Browns in terms of their passing game. So we're saying the same thing with the Browns, with the Ravens having to pass the ball against the Browns. It's the same thing for Baker. Baker's going to have to be able to make these plays and not get fooled by Earl Thomas and Tony Jefferson, who are both good safeties, very good safeties. But if the corners aren't there...
Rashard Higgins looks like he's probably not going to play.
Yeah.
If he can play, it'd be a huge boost, because he's one of Baker's kind of... You know, Baker likes throwing to him a lot. He's kind of a reliable target. And right now, this Browns offense, as star-studded as it is, they're getting pretty low on reliable targets, because Njoku's out and Higgins is probably out.
And they don't get Callaway back until next week.
Yeah. And I think OBJ might have to have a monster game to beat the Ravens.
Yeah.
Like $150 and a touchdown or more.
Mm-hmm.
Because, you know, OBJ and Landry are reliable targets, but beyond that is not a lot. Damian Ratley's played pretty well, but he's not someone you'd call a reliable NFL target yet.
I'd rather have Higgins than Ratley.
The Browns have no one at tight end. The Browns have just not use the running backs in a receiving capacity at all this year. That's one thing that's concerning too. I mean, the Browns have good running back depth on this team, and they're just not using the backups at all, and they're just not throwing to the running back much. Chubb had, I think, 4 catches this week, which is fine. But, yeah, it's – you know, if Freddie Kitchens wants to be an NFL head coach for more than this season, these are the types of games where he has to come up with a game plan and the team has to execute it, you know?
I mean, last year they ran multiple back sets with him. I don't understand why they can't run 2 running back sets with 2 receivers and a tight end.
Yeah.
They can. That is the personnel we have at the moment that would probably best fit us, having Baker back there with Landry and OBJ, and then having Hilliard or Dearness Johnson back there with Chubb to, you know, create different opportunities, create different plays. You can run the same route concept for each of the running backs if you want to do that and create options for Baker for checking down. To get Hilliard in space or Dearness Johnson in space, to get Chubb the ball out in the flat, to let him break tackles. You have to be able to do those different things and adjust. And the way the Ravens are playing, I get you might want to spread them out a little bit because of their potential injuries at corner, but you have to run other personnel besides 3 wide receivers and 1 tight end.
Yeah, I think Dontrell Hilliard is a guy that the Browns should use more with their lack of injuries right now.
Yeah.
Week 1, he had 1 carry for 4 yards. He had 1 catch on 2 targets for 14 yards. He did okay in the kickoff return game, though he shouldn't have really been returning the kicks. He had an 18-yard punt return. I mean, he had the first touchdown of the season for the Browns.
Yeah.
He's a guy that I think, you know, again, I am all for giving Nick Chubb like 20-some touches because he's that good.
Right.
But without the tight ends, the Browns are just not throwing the tight end at all right now.
And without Higgins. So.
And without Higgins. I think using the running backs more, whether or not is in the Browns' DNA, would be a good idea. Especially against a team like Baltimore that you have to have multiple looks or they're just going to shut you down.
The Browns need to sustain drives this week. They have to be able to have some long drives because if you get short drives against the Ravens and you give them a chance to just go down the field, the Ravens play really fast nowadays. The Ravens this year are playing at a very fast pace, and they're going to keep doing that. And sure, they'll run in some other stuff here and there, some huddles, but they like to play fast, and that suits Lamar Jackson really well. So the Browns have to be willing to control the clock and do things like that as opposed to just trying to go for it every single time. Because if they go 3 and out every time like they have been in a lot of drives this year, the Ravens are going to get good field position and they're just going to go straight down the field. Now, granted, if the Browns defense plays well, that might play in our favor and give us favorable field position. But the Ravens special teams is really good too. And that's been a thing for years, especially with John Harbaugh there as a former special teams coach. So their special teams is always good to go. They have one of the best kickers in the NFL in Justin Tucker, who can make kicks from basically anywhere. Him and Greg Zuerlein are really probably the 2 best kickers in the NFL at the moment. So the special teams is going to be big, but at the same time, this Browns offense has to sustain drives. They just have to if they want to have a chance. They don't have to score 30-some points to win this game. We said if they can get to like 24 points, I think the Browns have a really good chance to win this game.
Yeah, I agree. You know, if the Browns win this game, they're tied for first in the division with Baltimore, and all of a sudden the sky's not falling, you know? That said, they lose this one. They're 2 games back in the division. I think 9-7 could be a wild card team right now in the AFC, but at 3-0,
that means you'd have to go 8-4 the rest of the year.
At 3-0, San Francisco, at home against 2-1 Seattle, at the best team in football, New England, at Denver, who hasn't been good, but it's a road game against a team that has a good pass rush, and home against currently 3-0 Buffalo. The Browns have a soft schedule the last 7 games, but you know they. Losing to good teams is something that happens, but if you're going to be a good team, you have to beat good teams eventually.
Yeah.
And that's where the Browns are at, and this is a big time test, and they have failed 2 of the 3 tests they faced, if you can even count the Jets as a test, which
it wasn't.
Yeah.
That's like having a test in school and your teacher being like, "Hey,
yeah.
Here's the answer sheet."
Who was it? Was it was it Mr. Garver Hughes in high school? In middle school, he had this. He was a teacher that I had in middle school. I think Graham did too.
Same, yeah.
He had a question on one of his tests that was, "Does Mr. Garver Hughes wear glasses?" And he said, "Hey, check out question 8." And then he adjusted his glasses. that's what the Jets were for the Browns.
Yeah,
let's be honest. So, anyways, it's a big game. If the Browns win, the entire tenor of the season could be changed.
Mm-hmm.
If they lose,
it continues. It's going
to
get worse.
They're going to have to go on a major tear against some good teams if they want to be a playoff team.
Yeah.
And that's where the Browns have backed themselves into, so especially with that week 1 game, you know?
Yeah.
It will not be long until the Tree Seed Sports podcast is talking Cleveland Cavaliers basketball again. The season is closer than we all realize. The Cavs are perhaps not a good team at all right now, but they're at least going to be more exciting than they were last year.
Guard play.
Yes, that's right. We have guys that can shoot.
Wow.
So we'll have a basketball podcast at some point in the next couple weeks here. Please check out Tree City Sports. That's us. TreeCityRecords.com. Tree City Records on Twitter. My Twitter at @A_Baker_sports. Graham's Twitter at @GTMOHIN. If you don't know our Twitters by now, you haven't listened to our podcast ever, because we say it every time.
And also, we'll be back with a Red and Blue podcast soon, because we have some other things happening with the Champions League and with the Premier League as well. So me and Olin will be back soon with that. But make sure you guys listen to this episode of the Tree City Sports podcast, the flagship podcast of the Tree City Sports Network.
I think I'm going to start shouting out a random family member at the end of every podcast just to see who's listening. Hey, Mike, see you Monday for Black Keys.
Later.